Call the House Resources Committee to order. We do have a quorum for business. Apologize for the late start. We are on legislative time. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Whitaker.
Here.
Representative Jewell.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
Here.
Representative Morgan.
Here.
Representative Kapsner.
Here.
Representative Barnes. Representative Masick.
Here.
Co-Chairman Sanders.
Here.
Co-Chairman Ogun.
I'm here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll reconvene the House Judiciary Committee, and for the record, let it reflect that all members are present with the exception of Representative Cotullo, who I believe is on her way, and Representative Green, who is on his way.
Thank you.
And Representative Roberts. So, in other words, we have Representative Croft, Representative Murkowski, Representative James, and myself. Representative Davies in the audience. And Representative Coghill. More than welcome to join us at the table.
If you can find room.
Find seats, and those who occupy those seats don't throw you out. I get here.
Mr. Chairman. It was a little difficult for some people to find the sign-in sheet. Would you mind just announcing where it is if any last people want to get in on it?
Is there a sign-in sheet in the back, an extra copy? There should be. We have just the initial cut, starting with Mike Williams.
So it's back there if anyone, last stragglers, want to do it.
All right, if anybody's interested in signing up, we're not going to use the sign-up sheet from last night because we don't know if everybody's there.
Excuse me.
Yes, ma'am.
I signed up, and I came here before about 5:30 last night. I was second in line to sign up. I waited until it got over with to wait to get my chance to talk, and now I'm supposed to sign up again?
I don't know. Do we still have the sign-up sheet from last night?
We're getting those faxed.
Okay. You know, I'd be happy to give people that signed up last night. We'll run down. If they're not here, they're not, and we'll put new. That's fair.
Mr. Chairman.
Let's say that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to put a new sign-up sheet in the back.
Okay, there will be new sign-up sheets in the back. It's kind of hard even for people to get back there, but anyway, find a sign-up sheet. If you can't find one. See this gentleman here, Mr. Eddie Burke.
Chairman, how about if I put it back here by the sink, and then I'll periodically go out and get it?
Why don't we just pass it around?
Or is that just so hard to get back here as well?
Okay, find the sign-up sheet if you want to testify. We're here mostly here today to hear public testimony. I would ask if we can, if people have questions that are short and relevant, that they keep them short and relevant. We have quite a few people signed up to testify. I'd like to try to keep it within 3 minutes. We will give a little bit of latitude if we can, but we have we'd like to get through this if we can today. And I would ask the committee members not to debate the people that are here. If you have a point you want to make, maybe make a note and possibly wrap it up at the end, but we're here to listen to the people today. What I think we'll do is we'll start with the teleconference folks until we get our sheets up from last night. We do have people that were signed up in the teleconference today. And let's hear from, let's start with Kenai. Mr. Dale Bondurant, are you there?
Recognize that the fish, wildlife, and waters are common property resources.
Northern Trust for the equal benefit use of all the people. In the OSHA case, the court made over 20 references to the state's trustee duties, the public trust doctrine, and common use of the renewable resources. In McDowell, the court noted several other jurisdictions have struck down residential preferences in fish and game statutes. They further stated that laws must be passed on a, may be passed on the manner of taking and using common property resources. Yet this must be done upon the same terms to all the people. No spatial privileges or immunities can be conferred. In Peyton, the court stated, despite repeated legal challenges and revisions to the subsistence law, subsistence uses have been defined in terms of customary and traditional uses. Accordingly, we consistently interpreted customary and traditional to refer to uses and rather than users. Section 4, Article 8 allows for a preference among beneficial uses, but the Equal Protection Clause allows for no exclusive right or spatial privileges among users. The Alaska Supreme Court in Totem Off stated that the federal government's change of position in the reserve water doctrine during Katie John litigation deserves no deference in court decisions. The Ninth Circuit Court even admitted that their decision was inherently unsatisfactory. And on a reexamination, one judge filed a dissenting opinion stating that the United States has no interest in Alaska navigable waters since they gave them away in 1959 statehood. The other two judges stated their position in this hypocritical note, quote, our interpretation of the term public lands in this case will not allow the United States to usurp state power over navigable waters elsewhere, in other words, only in Alaska. Such irresponsible court position, in fact, and intent usurp Alaska's sovereignty under the Equal Footing Doctrine, State Police Powers, Submersed Lands Act, Privilege and Immunity, Due Process, and Legal Protection under the 14th Amendment. Further, in Totem Off, the Supreme Court gave six explicit reasons and cited over 40 court decisions, regulations, and acts to why the Alaska and not the federal government has the authority to regulate hunting and fishing in Alaska's navigable waters. When I personally asked the governor why he did not accept this authority as identified by our highest legal authority in Alaska, his reply was that several attorneys did not agree with this decision. When I pointed out this was an unanimous decision by the court and not an opinion of few attorneys and asked why he did not declare his authority to manage Alaska's fish and wildlife and challenged the federal government to take the state to the U.S. Supreme Court for a final binding decision, his reply was that he needed to talk to someone else. In two pertinent U.S. Supreme Court cases, they found that Congress is without power to enlist the state's cooperation in a joint federal-state program by legislation to authorize the state to violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. This is exactly what they are saying that they're going to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bondurant.
Mr. Chairman, could you ask Mr. Bondurant if he would fax his testimony, please?
Mr. Bondurant, did you hear that? Could you fax the testimony?
Yes, I'll submit some more later on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next on the list, we have, let's go to Kodiak, Mike Milligan.
Yes, can you hear me, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Milligan.
My name is Mike Milligan, and I'm representing myself. The question, the heavy question that weighs before you, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, is which constitution is the more powerful, the Alaska Constitution or the U.S. Constitution? Before the Bill of Rights was written, the U.S. Constitution clearly stated that a congressional power, a power allocated to Congress under Section 8, would be to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with Indian tribes. When ANILCA was enacted, unlike other treaties, they had to use the word rural as opposed to using the word native, because if they had used the word native, that would not have fallen under the legal parameters of the 14th Amendment, which we've heard cited by the previous speaker and was also cited by Representative Barnes last night. And you all know the 14th Amendment, that you have to have equal protection of the law. There's no solution that you can come up with that will solve this problem at this time. The decision before you, as I see it, is who do you want to sort out the solution? Do you want the feds to sort it out, or do you want the state to sort it out? I would concur with Senator Murkowski that we're better off to have the state sort it out at this time. If I was in charge, and I'm not, I would change the governor's wording of rural to local, but I don't know if that would pass muster, and I'm not going to try to second-guess the governor or the legislature at this time. But I would encourage you to come up with a solution that allows us to sort out the problems here. And one final comment, Mr. Chairman, is that the bigger issue that concerns me is that in the coming decade, I don't think it's a question of whether or not we can allow sport hunting or sport fishing. I think we're going to see a debate at the national level about the whole issue of the consumptive use of wildlife. And while those of us may be debating the difference between a subsistence hunter and a sport hunter, there are areas of the country that want to outlaw all hunting and all sport fishing. And without the foundation of the subsistence use for the consumptive use of wildlife and fish and game, we put all those rights that all Alaskans hold so dear at great risk at the national level. So I encourage you to come up with a solution that has the state making the solution, not the Fed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Milligan. I'm going to go to Ketchikan right now, Donald Westland.
Good morning. Short notice. We have a real problem. You can't, no matter what you do today or in the next couple of weeks or whatever, however long it takes you, the federal government will continue to manage under either system as it's set up. What we need to do, and I suggest to you this as a solution, is have a vote of the people of the state of Alaska on a advisory whether the governor should get online and file a lawsuit on this. We've had two lawsuits rejected, one by the governor himself and the other one by the court, saying that the legislature doesn't have the authority to enter into a lawsuit. The governor also made a statement yesterday, I think, at opening of this special session. He said no governor had contested this. If you would remember, one of his first acts coming into office was to drop the lawsuit by Hickel. So what we need to do is have the people vote on whether the state should sue the federal government on the grounds that the first person that gave you all the information, I think he's right on track. I think that's what we should do. I don't see you wasting your time. I don't see a solution here until this goes to court. And without it being heard in court, we can't change the state's constitution. What are we going to change it to? Next time, you know, next time they want something different. And the state will not manage as it does right now. Everybody in the state voted for, if I remember right, change the state's constitution to allow limited interest. That gave 90-some percent of the fish to the commercial fishermen. All residents of the state voted on that. At statehood, all residents of the state voted to become a state. I'm not trying to be negative on any of it, but everybody needs to come online on this to get the state and the federal government online in court to make a final decision. Any questions? Thank you.
Mr. Westland, I think it's an excellent idea. I think it's a fair characterization, and a lot of legislators are a little gun-shy of an advisory vote right now.
Yeah, but it's the only way to get the governor online. He continues to not support a lawsuit, and that's the only way we can settle this without knowing whether Title VIII of ANILCA is constitutional.
Well, I concur with you wholeheartedly, sir. Next, we have, I'm going to take one person from each community signed up, then I'm going to go to the, start with the list last night. We have in Nome, Perry Mendenhall.
Hello, I'm from Nome, Alaska, and I've been raised in Boise. I was raised in Nome. And I'm speaking for on behalf of the South Native Corporation. Here's my brief statement that economics in Northwest Alaska has not changed for the better since statehood in the areas of long-term economic development, especially for Barry Straits villages and now known concerning subsistence as well. Most of our village people are still very dependent upon the wildlife and fisheries to subsist on and keep the body and soul together, let alone to keep our sanity as to the way the state government views and protects our subsistence lifestyle. As to the decline of the chum salmon for the Nome area rivers, this illustrates the state's inability to help our people survive in a time of economic development hard times and in managing fish and game for subsistence. We felt that close votes in past legislation may have sufficed in protecting our subsistence lifestyle if the bill was passed instead of defeated. This has galvanized our villages and people toward looking forward to and expect the federal takeover of subsistence in our region if the state does not pass a subsistence bill such as House Bill 201. Instead of laying blame to Alaskans, it is time to exercise the election process to work toward resolving the subsistence bill needed for Alaskans in rural Alaska. And that's our frustration in looking at things in statehood. We always had frustrations here. We've always watched legislation, and we now want to resolve the subsistence dilemma by passing a House Bill 201, the last chance we have before October 1st. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Mendenhall, Representative Barnes has a...
I have a short question for him, if
question?
I could, please. Sir, I'd like to read you a statement, and you can tell me whether it's accurate or not. It's very short. Norm-based Bering Strait Native Corporation rode the stock market to revenues of $5.229 million and a net income of $1.538 million for the 9 months that ended March 31st, 1998. The corporation is expanding its real estate holdings, including a new 23-unit motel in Nome. Is that correct?
That is correct. But a lot of that does not go down to its shareholders, and not all the people in the region belong to Bering Straits. Some villages have opted to be away from Bering Straits, such as Elam, Savunga, and Gamble, that illustrates three, as to date. And that illustrates that also anything that's productive in our region, such as gold mining, has been hampered, slowed down, or anything else that we want to do, always run against a lot of regulations against economic development that will hamper us, let alone lack of funds for economic development planning. We need that. We need startup. That hasn't been since statehood available to us in our region. And as of recently, we just had water and sewer put into some of our villages, and our villages are still working toward having that. Well, what do you folks take for granted? could look at Bering Straits Native Corporation and blame that on our people that are in the villages that are not empowered to be there either. And I'm sorry, but that's the way it looks. And I feel that you take only one aspect of our Native way of life. And corporation does not say that we would have bread and butter on that. They manage the land. They help us in that respect and protect it. And that's why we made those land selections. And part of that revenue there is to help protect our land, too, that we have generated, is to help protect the future taxation and buyouts and whatever that regard our land claims.
Thank you, Mr. Mendenhall.
Thank you.
Representative Barnes?
My point was that I should think they would be quite proud that they're doing so well. Not in any way being demeaning. And certainly in this article here, it looks like to me most of the Native corporations are doing quite well. They paid out $53 million in dividends last year.
Thank you for that point, Representative Barnes. Next, we'll go to Sitka, Mr. Mark Jacobs, Jr.
Thank you, members of the legislature. All I would like to say that the present constitution has the adequate wording to protect subsistence. Article 12, Section 12 states that under disclaimer, the state of Alaska and its people forever disclaim any right or title or in any property belonging to the United States or subject to its disposition and is not granted or confirmed to the state or its political subdivision by any or under the act admitting Alaska to the Union. The state of Alaska and its people further disclaim any right to fishing and right title to which may be held by or for the Indian Eskimo and Aleut. The title is defined as an act of admission. And I remember the time of statehood act, Article 4 of admittance to the Union mandated that this language be put in the state constitution. I take it that the Alaska state constitution is the highest and most authoritative law in the state of Alaska by which we live. It recognizes the Indian rights. I noticed that the state of Alaska and federal people refuse to use the word aboriginal rights and inherent rights. Those are items that cannot be legislated. Let regulations come from the anything that is not law. Now what happens now is that you create laws and regulations that is not lawful at all. It's a violation of human rights to take away the food and water. It's as free as the air to us. Now you're talking about sustained yield and all those different conservations. And you quote Article 15 of the Act, the state constitution. Article 15, equal rights protection. The state is not living up to that section. I'll find it here in a minute. Okay. Article 7, Article 8, Section 15. No exclusive right of fishery or special privilege of fishery shall be created or authorized in the natural waters of the state of Alaska. This section does not restrict the power of the state to limit to entry to any fishery for the purpose of resource conservation to prevent economic distress among fishermen and those dependent on it for livelihood and to promote efficient development of aquaculture in the state of Alaska. Now, what is happening today is that we're having a flood of car charter boats coming to Alaska. You see, our local fleet is tied up, and they have one of the heaviest investments in their livelihood. These trawlers can't cost from anywhere from $100,000 to probably $250,000, and they are forced to tie up while the charter boats are busy sending tons and tons of fish by air to the lower 48. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobs. And I want to note that I appreciate the brevity and the to-the-pointness of the witnesses so far, and haven't had to admonish anybody to shorten it up, so I appreciate that very much. We have some people in Angoon. We don't have a list, but I'd like to, you guys can select the first person that would like to talk, and maybe how many people do you have there to testify? Angoon, do you hear us?
Can you hear?
Yes, we do.
This is Maxine Thompson. I'm mayor for the city of Angoon. And we have 7 people present.
Do they all wish to testify?
We have...
Okay. Well, I'll take you. Go ahead and take you, Maxine. Then we're going to work off the list of the people here in Juneau for a little bit.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and let Peter Jack Sr. testify first.
Okay. Mr. Jack?
Yeah, my name is Peter Jack Sr. I would like to begin with the fact that I lived the subsistence way of life all of my life. As a child, I remember going to what we call a fish camp 2 times a year, and that is to plant vegetables and in the fall gather fish and game. And so I really think that that we've lost ground on subsistence from the way I knew it back when I was a child. As a subsistence user, we are being regulated more than other users of our natural resource. For instance, we have to have a permit to get fish, and then we have to report back to the people of the state to make a report on how much fish we got and how much we didn't get. But yet, the sports fishermen, the people who are there day after day, every week, back to places like Canalco and Mitchell Bay in Angoon, going back again and again. And as far as I know, they are not regulated or allowed to report back on the take. I think that that is discriminatory on the part of the state or whoever regulates the subsistence. We are being watched constantly. Some of our nets are being confiscated and burned or whatever they do with it in here in Angoon area. And our people, the fact that they try to preserve and to protect the environment and the fish and game, the natural resource. And I can say that for a fact that from the time I remember listening to our elders, they've always talked to the land. They actually believe that it had a spirit, and that you have to treat it right in order for it to support you. And that's the way we grew up. And I can say that we are conservationists as a single people, probably all of Native Alaskans. because it was recorded. They're probably thinking, how can you say such a thing like that? Statement that you are a conservationist and that you protect the natural resource for the future. It was reported by a captain, Vancouver, who first came to Admiralty Island back in 1794. According to the report from Captain Vancouver, the report says that the wealth of salmon and game that abounded in the bays and inlets of the island, if there is a shortage in fish and game, the natural resource that we use for subsistence, it will not be our fault. There are other users in our state. And even here in Angoon, we see boats out there fishing. But yet they're not monitored. They're not required to report in. Give them a limit to catch, probably, I don't know. But are they monitored? Are they allowed to report in like we do? And before, I think that is discriminatory against the subsistence user when we have to have a permit and report back. But yet other users don't go through all of that. Thank you for giving me a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Jack. Just for the record, people that take people out fishing for charters are required to keep a record of the catch. So that's something that the legislature required them to do a couple years ago. Sport fishermen that are residents and non-residents have a simple limit that they're allowed. And I know non-resident sport fishermen in Southeast Alaska, I believe, can only take maybe three or four, maybe five king salmon. There's a limit on that. So anyway, but appreciate your comments, sir.
I know all of that, but what I'm saying, are they monitored? Are they do they report back day after day after day when they're out there?
I'm not sure of the exact modality. I know at the end of the season, the commercial guys, the guys that are guiding sport fishermen, I should say, I consider that a commercial fishery, are required to report to catch. So it's all also we can manage the resource is. We've got to know. I know it's a pain. It's not as easy as going out and just throwing your net in the water and not worrying about it, but there's a lot more demand on the resource. We need to move on. Thank you very much, Mr. Jack. I appreciate your testimony. I'm going to go to the list, the sign-up last night, work down that. Julie Kitka was signed up first. Julie? Billy, since you represent Alaska Federation of Natives, I'd like to give you a little bit more time than just a three-minute window. We gave a lot of time to the administration last night, and so if you have some additional comments,
we appreciate
give
that,
you a little
Mr.
bit of latitude.
Chairman.
Welcome.
I don't know if Norm Cohen is here. Norm Jonas. Mr. Chairman, both Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Julie Kitka, and I'm the president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, and accompanying me this morning is two of our legal counsels on that in order to answer any questions, should you have questions. To my left is Chris McNeil, Jr., attorney, and to my right, Norm Cohen, attorney.
Excuse me, I didn't quite catch Chris's last name.
McNeil,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Thank you.
For the record, AFN supports passage first by the legislature and then by the people of the state of Alaska of a constitutional amendment and a state statute complying with Title VIII of ANILCA as it's currently written without any amendments to ANILCA that weaken the federal subsistence protection. FN, for the record, opposes the filing by the governor or the legislature of a federal court suit challenging the constitutionality of Title VIII of ANILCA, the authorities of the secretaries, or any other arguments for state management in the absence of compliance with ANILCA. There should be no more delays. The legislature has failed to resolve this dilemma for over 10 years, and every Alaskan knows what the real issue is during this special session. Title VIII is sound, responsible public policy which must remain in place. It has been litigated over and over and consistently has withheld such challenges. Demand for another suit is one more delaying tactic that tries to block a prompt resolution. We urge the legislature to get on with the public's business and to resolve here and now the most bitter issue dividing Alaskans today. For the same reasons, we oppose any further delay or moratoriums. Approving such an amendment today, we think, would bring the people of the state of Alaska together. Our people in the state must have the right to vote in November of the year 2000, and if this special session cannot produce such an amendment to the Constitution, then two things will happen. We'll all have to live with federal management with subsistence fisheries, and the Alaskan public will know who has failed them. I wanted to bring to your attention some comments and statements that have been made recently on the national level to give you a sense that something that we have felt for a long time, but you may not be aware of it, and I know everybody has busy schedules in their lives over the course of the summer and so forth on that, but there is getting to be increasing national attention to what's going on in the state and quite a bit of national attention to what's going on in this special session. And I would like, for the record, to introduce a front-page New York Times article on the subsistence issue for your reading. I've talked to several legislators, and they were not aware of that, but I thought that would be of some interest to you. I also wanted to bring to your attention that recently we sponsored a national forum on the future of Alaska Natives back in Washington, D.C. on the September 9th, and that was in co-sponsorship with the Alaska Intertribal Council, the Native American Rights Fund, the National Congress of American Indians. And it was held primarily to take a look at issues and concerns facing the Native people of Alaska on the national level, to begin a national dialogue on some of them. Well, the reason I bring this to your attention is there was a number of people that participated in this forum and spoke, which were directly on point on issues facing you here during this special session, and that was on the conflict on subsistence. And I wanted just to bring to your attention shortly, earlier yesterday I raised for the Senate Resources Committee a statement that the President of the United States made recently on subsistence, and for the record I'd like to introduce the videotape message that he delivered to this forum on the 9th of September for your review, and because of time limits not show it, it's only 3 or 4 minutes, but for your record.
Ms. Kitka, could you, if you could provide that to my staff aide, Dave Stancliffe, and also the New York Times article, we could have that copied, distributed right now.
I'd like to just go over about 3 or 4 commitments and comments made by these speakers. Again, I say it's right on point on what's in front of you. President Clinton, in his remarks, basically stated, and I'll quote, "Tonight I reassure you that our administration stands with you to improve the recognition of your religious and cultural practices, to increase your sovereignty and self-determination, to support the subsistence rights of all Alaskan Natives. If Alaska Natives are to continue their way of life and maintain their culture, Alaska must comply with the Alaska National Interest Land Conservation Act. This federal law protects subsistence fishing. Our position is not simply one of words. We're ready to take action. Secretary of Interior Bruce Babbitt is moving to take over fisheries management in order to maintain your subsistence rights. I sincerely hope the Alaska legislature enacts a constitutional amendment which will make it unnecessary for the secretary to take this action." Senator Daniel Inouye, who is a very senior member of the United States Senate.
Yes. Excuse me. Ms. Chitka.
Before we proceed, I would like to comment on the comments by President Clinton. President Clinton is a self-admitted liar and a convicted perjurer, and he lied in that. He said he would protect all of the Native rights. He's not protecting my wife's rights. She's Native. He's not protecting my son's rights. They're Native. And he's not protecting my daughter's rights.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I should clarify why I'm reading these commitments and comments made is not to convince you that you have to agree with what the commitments and comments were made, but was to demonstrate that there is national interest in what's going on. And the fact that you have recent comments within the last couple of weeks from the President of the United States and the Office of the President specifically on this point in front of you, to me, demonstrate that there is national interest being paid attention to what you're doing. And to us, that raises the importance of this legislature to successfully grasp with this issue and get a resolution out to the voters of the state of Alaska.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Barnes, and let's...
I have no intention of dwelling on it.
Right.
However, Ms. Kitka has chosen to rebut the remarks of Representative Sanders with saying there's national attention focused. And the national attention is not just one way. People throughout the United States are also concerned that if you can deny the rights of some Alaskans and give those rights to a special group of Alaskans, then you can do it anywhere in the United States. So this national attention is not just one way. And like Representative Sanders, telling me something Clinton says is like pouring hot water on an open wound. I don't think he's much of a president.
All right, now we've expressed our opinions about President Clinton, let's move on to the testimony.
Second.
I'll reserve mine.
Like I said, the point was to just demonstrate that there is national attention and interest focused on what you're doing, and our desire that us conveying that to you will indicate the seriousness of what you're doing and the importance of a successful resolution. Senator Daniel Inouye from Hawaii, which I said over 40 years of public service on behalf of the American people, stated at this forum, those of us who serve in the Senate are involved in the work of the Committee on Indian Affairs are well aware of the ongoing struggle in the state of Alaska to address the subsistence provisions of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. In Hawaii, our situation is very different. The rights of the native people of Hawaii to hunt, to fish, to gather for subsistence purposes, and to practice the traditions and customs of their culture have been recognized in the laws of Hawaii from the earliest time. Our state constitution specifically addresses native subsistence rights and extends protection of these rights exclusively for native Hawaiians. Secretary Bruce Babbitt, Secretary of Interior, also spoke at this forum and stated, there will not be another moratorium. There will be no amendments to ANILCA on my watch, and October 1st we'll make the transition to a new subsistence regime. Secretary Dan Glickman, who's the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture, who also has jurisdiction on implementation of the federal law because of Forest Service lands that are under his department, stated the title of this conference could not be more appropriate. The very future of Alaska Natives is what's at stake in this long-running dispute over subsistence fishing rights. Let me say unequivocally that if the state does not move forward with the constitutional amendment 22 days from now, I'm prepared to work with Secretary Bruce Babbitt to provide the resources necessary to manage these fisheries on the federal lands, thus upholding ANILCA, preserving the rural priority and protecting the native Alaskan way of life. We hope it doesn't come to that. We hope the state can resolve this on its own. We're not in the habit of coming in and administering state affairs, but we will do it if we have to, and we'll do it because for Alaska Natives, fishing isn't just weekend sport, a nice way to relax after a rough week at the office. It's certainly about food and livelihood. For Alaska Natives, subsistence fishing is the fabric that holds their communities together. It's bound up in their cultural, historical, and spiritual lives. To take it away would rip the heart out of Alaska Native people. Like I said, the reason why I'm bringing these to your attention and asking they be included in the record was, again, to bring to point some recent commitments and comments made by people that have responsibilities under the law to implement the federal law should you not act during the special session and put a constitutional amendment out. And these, like I said, the relevance of it is it was just in the last couple of weeks that these statements were made. representing district in the state of Georgia. Often over the last few years, there's been a lot of discussion about equality and so forth on that. And we were proud to have Congressman Lewis participate in this forum, coming out in support of the Native people and the subsistence rights. And there was a couple aspects of that I just wanted to bring to your attention, because, again, I get a sense that here in the legislature and in the state, there's not a recognition of the growing awareness in the country, the growing awareness among African-American people and organizations, as well as Hispanic organizations and people and other groups around the country of interest in what's going on. Like I said, I'll be very brief on that. Congressman Lewis basically said, our struggle for justice and civil rights has always had a strong attachment to the land. When Frederick Douglass raised his voice against the injustices of slavery, he spoke of a man's right to throw off the yoke of slavery and work his own land. And as the struggle for justice continues, the sacred connection between people and the land remains strong. We now fight for the right to live in a land free of pollution. We fight for the right to know what is in the food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe. But as the movement drives forward to capture new ground in the fight for justice, we must not forget the ancient battles that are yet to be won. Indeed, the right of the Eskimo, the Indian, the Aleut people of Alaska to gather food and feed their children is not a special right. It is a human right. The fight for the right to hunt and fish and to carry on the ancient traditions of their ancestors is not a fight for dollars and cents. It is a fight for the survival of a people, to preserve a way of life. We, a nation founded upon the ideals of justice, of a responsibility, and a sacred obligation to see what this fight is. Also wanted to add to the record the support of the national NAACP, who's come out publicly in support, as well as a whole list of other national organizations that have said that they would like to come out and support the Native people in this and support our position in getting this resolved in the state, but also to support the position and no amendments to ANILCA. I could go on as far as other comments and commitments that people have made, but I did want to bring to you the seriousness and the wide and growing support that there is in this country and the growing support, we believe, in the state of Alaska behind getting this resolved in a way that is fair to the Native people of Alaska. We continue to maintain on the record we would like the state to regain management, but want to just finally conclude with that we cannot support any amendments to ANILCA that weaken the federal subsistence protections, and it's a matter of record that we are doing everything we can to bring to the American people and different members in the Congress on that, of the importance of maintaining the integrity of that law. And so I would just very sincerely urge this legislature to wrestle with the issue of the constitutional amendment, stop this conflict that's been going on for a decade, and let the people of Alaska vote on this. And like I said, try to help the state restore the management. Like I said, just wanted to make it clear where our position is at, and be glad to answer any questions, and have a counsel available at your disposal to answer any technical questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kitka. I have a couple of questions for you, and I'll field a couple, and then I think maybe if the chairman of the Judiciary Committee members have any questions. A couple of things. Maybe you could clarify your position on ANILCA amendments. Are the ANILCA amendments that were in the governor's task force during the last special session we had on this off the table now?
Support no amendments to ANILCA. And it's my understanding that when the legislature refused to act on this at the last special session a year ago, that is why those amendments disappeared out of federal law, and they're off the table.
Mm-hmm. Do you support a federal takeover of fisheries management?
We support the state coming into compliance with ANILCA. We support a constitutional amendment being put on the ballot in the year 2000 to let the people vote on this. But if the legislature is unwilling to let the people vote on that, we support full federal implementation of the federal law.
On your national forums and in your national media, are you explaining to the people that Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights were extinguished with the Native Claims Settlement Act?
We're having lots of discussions with people and lots of briefings, and always, of course, there's lots of questions as people try to understand what's going on. People are still learning.
I don't think you answered the question. I'll read it to you. It's Declaration of Settlement, Section 4, Paragraph B. It says, all Aboriginal titles, if any, and claims to Aboriginal title in Alaska based on use and occupancy, i.e. Indian country, which was settled in the U.S. Supreme Court under Venati case, including submerged land beneath all water areas, both inland and offshore, and including any Aboriginal hunting or fishing rights that may exist, are hereby extinguished. Now, I might not be as learned as the attorneys that are sitting next to you, but I think I can understand that language. It's rather plain on its face and unambiguous. If I recall, the Alaska Federation of Natives at the time signed off on the deal in exchange for 44 million acres of land, fee simple title. If memory serves me, it was originally 22 million acres, and it was amended on the floor of the House, I think, by Senator Kennedy, or floor of the Senate by Senator Kennedy, to the 44 million acres with a specific reason to meet the subsistence needs of the Alaska Natives, and $1 billion in for-profit corporations. So, are you explaining that to the national media and these conferences that Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights are extinguished?
Let me explain what we have been explaining to people, and probably the best way to do that is to also put into the record some comments that were made by Congressman Mark Udall, who is the son of the former chairman of the House Interior and Insular Affairs that had jurisdiction over this and is actually the author of Title 8 of ANILCA. Congressman Mark Udall, when he addressed our forum, talked about several principles that were important as we went forward on this subsistence issue, and talked about memory, the federal responsibility, and also respect, but specifically into memory. And he was asked to address the legacy of his father, again, as the author of Title 8 and chairman of the committee, similar to the role that Chairman Don Young holds now, House Resources, used to be House Interior and Insular Affairs. Chairman Udall, this is his son, that's a member of Congress, states, specifically in connection with subsistence, we need to remember that when the House and Senate considered the Settlement Act, one of the issues was whether or not the law should include provisions to protect the ability of Alaska's Native people to continue those subsistence activities after the law made major changes in the legal status of Alaskan lands. We need to remember that while the conferees finally decided not to include such provisions in the Settlement Act, they did so because of their explicit expectation, stated in the conference report, that the Secretary of Interior could and would be able to protect continued subsistence activities. We need to remember it was the realization that the conferees' expectation had been over-optimistic that led to the revisiting of the issue as part of the debate over the future of the lands in Alaska remaining in national ownership after the Settlement Act. And we need to remember that Title 8, the subsistence title, is a key part of the legislation that has shaped our government's relationship with Alaska's Native people. And again, this is Congressman Mark Udall's statements on that, reflecting on his father's role in designing Title 8 of ANILCA, and it was specifically as a result of the discussions between the House and Senate during the Settlement Act and the conference report language that Chairman Udall and others put in the report at the time, as well as their recognition that the Secretary had failed to protect the subsistence rights, and that's what brought this issue back up when ANILCA was being debated in the Congress and eventually ended up with Title 8 being in there. And again, I'd just like to put that into the record.
Okay, well, I guess, you know, we can put a lot of statements in the record. I won't put in the record the commitments I have out of three Republican presidential candidates that Alaska should not amend its constitution, and a fourth, including George W. Bush, said he's a strong 10th Amendment states' rights advocate. I guess I just did put it in the record, but
Mr. Chairman,
we can get into a political fight over it. But
I would like to address that also. You know, people have made comments in regard to the national forum and the strong support from the administration. Our organization has worked with both Democratic and Republican administrations. The first time that this legislature held a special session on this conflict from the McDowell decision, it was a Republican administration. President Bush was president. Secretary Manuel Lujan from the state of New Mexico was Secretary of Interior. He traveled to the state of Alaska and became the first Secretary of Interior, Republican Secretary of Interior, to testify before the state legislature on this issue. He testified in support of the legislature putting a constitutional amendment out before the people. And so I do not believe that this is a Democratic issue or Republican issue. I believe it is a bipartisan one, and just would like to put that into the record that it was a Republican administration that sent the first Secretary of Interior to testify before your legislature. It was in a special session in Anchorage, and many of you were in the legislature at the time in which that happened. I was floored that a secretary would travel to do that and was very pleased, and he was very straightforward. It was the very first special session.
Thank you. Do it. Any of the other committee members have questions for Ms. Kitka or her cohorts?
Yesterday we heard from the administration regarding the governor's constitutional amendment, and I'll bring it up again to you, Julie, regarding the language that has been put in and some comments that you just made reflecting to bringing state management back to the state of Alaska if we went ahead and put this proposed amendment before the voters to vote on it, that it would give state management back. And again, I have to say that I think that's very false and misleading information because of ANILCA and the way it's drafted, because of the judicial court oversight provisions that are in ANILCA, that if the state is not in compliance, even if we went ahead and, you know, change that part of the Constitution that protects every person in the state of Alaska on equal access to the resource, which every person here in the state should have that access, regardless of where you're from or who you are or where you were born, what zip code you have. But with that federal court oversight, it does not give the state management back, and I want to hear your provision on that aspect. Just that if it's giving true state management back, and it's just a flawed statement, I think that the other side is pushing. I shouldn't say the other side, because we should all be working as Alaskans on this issue, and I, for one, have to rethink and revisit and look at all the languages that have been put forth before us, and it does not really give the state the true management back that it should have.
Well, to respond to that, I think that you're right as far as federal court oversight and federal involvement in implementation of the law. That is a congressional policy, and that is part of ANILCA, and that we support that because we think that that is part of the protections for subsistence that the Congress has made a policy choice to do. And that's just the federal law.
Mr. Chairman, too, on that point, I don't believe that there has ever been a case that had been won in federal courts regarding subsistence, and I believe we have a few attorney generals on record. Even Attorney General Charlie Cole said there have never been a case that had been tried and successfully won, and that's really a very important part of this deliberations on how we can get to where we want to go as a state. And I also believe we had hearings in the Kenai Peninsula a few years ago, and at that time I believe Deborah Williams was in charge of the Secretary for the State of Alaska and BIA, and I did ask her that if we did bring forth any type of constitutional amendment or anything to the people of the state of Alaska, and if it was put forward and the people voted it down, then what actions would Congress take? And they said they would just go ahead and take over anyway, regardless of what the people of the state of Alaska voted on. And I think, you know, that they're putting the wedge farther in by making statements like that. And I think that with all the deliberations and the debates and all the national interests that are involved here, but what's at stake here is every Alaskan that are, you know, part of the United States of America. I have to admit that I live in Willow now, and even my son, who is Athabascan Indian, know, everything that is happening here can affect him and his children later on. And I believe that he's left out of the process as far as access to fish and game, if anything was done, because there are a large number of Native people that live in urban areas, and I just can't see how people at the national level can think that they're protecting every Alaska Native person in the state of Alaska, as to what Representative Sanders brought up about his wife, who is an Eskimo from Nome, and how can he go home and explain that to the Native people that are in his family. So it is a very flawed, it's like a diamond cut, I think, you know, with all the information that you're providing. And when you look at the true facts as far as how we're going to really resolve it, I think the truth really needs to come out, and with this federal court oversight, I just want to bring that up on the record again, because I think the people in the state of Alaska should really understand this issue, and we want that true management back. Then we're going to have some ANILCA amendments that are included. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Massey. Are there any other questions from the Resource Committee members? I'd like to maybe just make a couple comments, Ms. Kitka, and then I'll turn it over to the Chairman Cott from the Judiciary Committee. I'm getting increasingly frustrated at my moving and offering compromise and trying to work with my good friends here in the legislature, and I mean that sincerely, who are Native, to try to come up with a compromise that we can both live with. And I truly believe in my heart that your hard stance of no compromise, no amendments to ANILCA, we're going to dig in, and when I keep moving and moving and moving, I'll come a long way, Ms. Kitka. I went from, this bill ain't going to have no, I didn't use that bad in English, any more hearings in my committee a couple of years ago, to being willing to consider constitutional protection for subsistence, and even voting yesterday to consider proximity to residents. And I'm sticking my neck out a country mile to do that, and I don't see one iota of negotiating in good faith from your side of the equation. And I resent it, and my patience for it is going rather thin, because if we want to solve this, we're going to have to come up with a solution that both sides can live with. And my side on this, unfortunately, can't live with creating two classes of people in this state. And my friends to the left of me here have some problems with that, because it discriminates against them and their families. And so if you want to negotiate in good faith, we'll negotiate. My door's open. I've moved a long way. But I don't see, I see you folks pulling back even further. And if you want, and what's ultimately going to happen, it's going to balkanize the state into different classes of people. And it's going to get worse from here out. And I hope I'm wrong, but I think that's...
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to address the issue of compromise. And I think if you look back in history, the point that you brought up about ANCSCA and the abolishment of Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights in Section 4B of the Land Claim Settlement Act, you will find that there was no compromise, an opportunity for compromise for the Alaska Native people with that issue. That was something that was done to them at the very last minute. And I think that if you look at the passage of ANILCA in 1980, where because of the special committee report on ANCSCA and the need to settle the issue of subsistence hunting and fishing for Alaska Natives, that in the development of that law, that it was the state of Alaska that objected to Alaska Natives, and the state of Alaska that settled for rural. And again, we were not at the table. Now, We've been compromised again and again. And if it appears to you that there's no movement, when you have it done to you, you know, I mean, along the way, there were promises made, and Representative Williams from Ketchikan just keeps repeating this, a deal's a deal. And I know you're familiar with this history, but sometimes maybe, you know, we pick and choose what we want to remember, I have selective memory, and that's the part of my selective side showing up, I guess. But it's there, and I think that it's an unfair statement to say that we've not compromised. Man, we've been compromised time and time again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
I respect your views, sir, and if I might just one second. And that's the bottom line, though, is that unless we come up with a solution that we can both live with, we're looking at federal management. No, federal allocation of our resources. It's not management. And we're going to divide up the state into groups, and I don't know if, again, I'm not real optimistic about the long-term future. I mean, that might have been then, but we're here now. And we've got, and I'm willing to talk about constitutional protection for subsistence. And that's, believe me, that's a long ways for me. I mean, I've come a long ways. And I don't see anybody willing to give anything but lip service on it, frankly. I mean, Ms. Kick, you've been very patient while we banter here. And
no, I was delighted to hear Representative Jewell's comments on that, but I did want to respond to the fact, the statement that you're talking about, your consideration of a constitutional amendment, and did want to state for the record that I do recognize that you're talking about constitutional amendment as well as Representative Barnes introducing one. Is movement from my understanding of Representative Barnes' position for many years. I recognize that, and I applaud that. And I also applaud people putting ideas on the table of ways to solve that. I think that that is good, and some things work, some things don't work. And so I do want to put that on the record, that I recognize that. But I also want to say that when you kind of look at from our position, we wonder how come, you know, the legislature and the state can put a constitutional amendment on the ballot that, and what were the circumstances that allowed the legislature to initiate a process to amend the Constitution to allow the ownership of 97% of all the fishery resources in the limited entry program? Our subsistence uses of fish and game is so minuscule in the whole big picture on that, you know, that's what frustrates us. And you know, we're talking about the legislature did allow the people to vote on limited entry, and that dealt with 97% of all the fish. They made decisions on that. When it comes down to our people and our communities that depend upon that, and I think that the State Department of Fish and Game puts it at less 3-4% on that, our people do not understand why this is such a big deal and so hard to put on the ballot. And so I think that probably the reason why we're so firm in our position on that is we have our backs against the wall. We can't go any back any further. We cannot give up the federal protections. Title VIII is the only federal protections that we have to protect us. We don't have constitutional amendment language that protects us. We have, from our perspective, a hostile state government on that is hitting us from all angles on that, and it wouldn't make any sense for us to offer up key portions of the federal protections that we have. So, like I said, I know that probably doesn't sit well with this committee or this legislature, but that is a fact of life from us and why we are positioned.
So. Ms. Kicka, I'm willing to discuss a constitutional amendment that would put you in front of commercial fishermen, put subsistence use in front of commercial fishermen, that would give you constitutional protection in the highest court of our state, that if you're not, if there isn't enough to go around, that commercial guys have to wait it out until subsistence use is met. That, I won't mention his name, but one very prominent legislator around here that happens to be a native told me last year, 2 years ago, that works. It works. You're right, it works. And was willing to support it, but the politics wouldn't allow him to. Now, I'm willing to offer that to you. I mean, if you're willing to come to the table and talk about that, let's talk about it. And in a real sense, and I like in our testimony from our own administration, and I think maybe even your attorneys here would agree that if a subsistence use preference would put you in front of commercial fish, give you the number one slot, and subsistence is 2 to 4%, we heard on the record last night, of the take of fish, and 90% of the subsistence take of fish in game is fish. So what we're talking about is fish here. So I'm willing to put you guys first. I'm willing to discuss that subsistence use preference that I think meets the spirit and the intent of Mo Udall and the whole nine, and Anelka, and the conference committee report, and the whole nine yards. I honestly, in the bottom of my heart, believe that. Now, if you're willing to discuss that, I'm willing to discuss that. But if you know, I can dig in as good as you guys can. You know, so do you want to compromise?
Well, we're always willing to sit down and talk, and like I said, that's why I've had our lawyers here and available to answer any questions. And if there is a desire to sit down and talk about things on that, I'll make them available to do that. I think that part of the difficulty in the whole thing is that we are operating in a very short time frame for the October 1, and the parameters are very tight on that. I think that one of the things that when you look at the constitutional amendment, and again, this is the way I look at that, all this constitutional amendment does is give the flexibility of the legislature to pass a law. That's all a constitutional amendment does. You still have the next step of designing the law, designing the management system, the regulatory system, and then making it work. I don't know if I understand fully what you're talking about on that, but like I said, our folks would be willing to do that. On the previous constitutional amendment that's been before you, you know, particularly the governor's or Senator Adams or Senator Hoffman's constitutional amendment, which is our preferred approach to the whole thing, what they're doing in those constitutional amendment is giving the flexibility to the legislature to make distinctions between people in areas and actually giving the legislature, in our view, more flexibility to design a system that works. And maybe I'm not a lawyer or whatever. To me, you know, that's why I find it so frustrating the legislature to not do a constitutional amendment put on the ballot. All you're doing is giving yourselves the flexibility to do another step. And that's why in our view it's a threshold question. If you don't want to give yourself the flexibility to do it, you don't have the legal ability to do a law to implement something. And so I guess the good news is you're considering constitutional amendments. The bad news is we have a very short window of opportunity and tight parameters. But we're willing to sit down and talk if that's something that would be helpful.
My door's open. I'd be happy to meet with you personally and some of your representatives and sit down. I mean, because I think it's frankly probably the best offer you can get out of this legislature. And I, like I said, I've come a long way. But I told the administration, I've got to see some movement from the other side. Or we can all get out our shovels, I guess, and dig in, you know. So, and I'd rather not do that. I'd really, really rather not. We're running out of time. Are there any other questions from the Resources Committee? And I appreciate the candor of our interaction here. Hearing none, I'm going to turn it over to the Judiciary Chairman and make a run down the hall.
I guess we'll make our run at it, not really. We'll start off with Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Kick, I have several different questions here. First, I'd like to ask the witness, assuming you still live in District 11, have you talked to your representative about this issue and you know his position on this issue?
Pardon me?
Assuming you still live in District 11, have you talked to your representative about this issue and do you know his position on this issue?
No.
Yeah, I can verify that.
I live in his district.
Right. Well, the reason I brought that up is not to, but it's the point that I think that the chairman of the Resources Committee has been talking about here. Because I want you to know that I share that concern. This perceived lack of desire and or policy within the organization to enter into good faith negotiations or any type of compromise. And I'm very happy to hear the comments that were made this morning. I think President Hogan is offering you something that I guess I'm disappointed hasn't taken place previously. Even the point that you and I haven't had a conversation on this in any depth. And I think that's just symbolic or emblematic of some of the problems we have in this, particularly given the perception that's been painted in the press and throughout the state the last few years about the relationship between the Native community in the state and this legislature, which I think is not really correct. And matter of fact, you mentioned that some folks in these committees may have been aware of what happened in the first special session on subsistence. Well, I would tell you that with the exception of Reverend Barnes, there's not one member of both of these committees that were here then. And, and so we have a lot of new members, a lot of new players, and I think there's a great willingness, particularly now with the clock ticking, to reach some consensus, and that's very important, and you should know that. And I guess that I'm very interested to hear, and I think as a member of the Judiciary Committee, I think the Judiciary Committee would be very interested in seeing any suggestions that you might have in regards to an amendment that you believe you could live with that may well be different than the governor's. I think that there should be a recognition, given the fact that there's a committee substitute on the desk, that the governor's amendment it is not necessarily the way to reach the magic numbers that we have on both houses of this legislature. That's a concern. Even people that favor your position, that want to see resolution and the placement on the ballot, recognize the political reality of getting the votes to do so. I mean, that's one of our main jobs right now, having a good amendment and having consensus. And I think this is an extraordinary opportunity we have to bring the state together and heal some of the wounds that have been opened in the last several years. Because I think many of those wounds that have been opened are misguided and unfortunate. But we have to recognize that. So, I have the perception that your organization has a tendency to fly right over Juneau and go to Washington, D.C. to get anything done in here. Not that much interaction. You have some very strong voices here in this body, though. Well, in both the House and the Senate. You have some very good Native leadership as representatives here. I just don't have the sense that they're doing a good job of representing your interests. But we can't seem to bridge that final gap. Forgive me for talking so long. I didn't intend to do that, but as a lifetime Alaskan, this is a major issue and the most important one we have before us. And so I'd like to know if you are willing to work with us in this very short period of time to perhaps show some good faith in bargaining and make some concessions, possibly, that you could live with.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address the issue of knowing where we stand on the constitutional amendment. I mentioned earlier that the Senate Joint Resolution 1, sponsored by Senator Adams, Senator Hoffman, and Senator Lincoln, is a good indication of a constitutional amendment that we think would work, and would urge that be pulled and distributed to the committee so you can see the range of criteria that we have in there, again, which gives the flexibility in the Constitution in order to do a statute. That is something that we have supported for a number of special sessions because we think it works and solves the problem. And so that probably would be the most helpful as far as where we're at. But we'd be willing to sit down and talk. But like I said, if you pulled that, you'd get an idea where we're at.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, thank you. Ms. Kitka, you know, if we fail to act right now, could you describe to the committees under what circumstance, and hopefully you've thought about this, if any, that we could return to sole management by the state of Alaska of our fish and game resources? In other words, if we lose them, do you think that the AFN would ever support and work towards regaining state management once that's lost? I mean,
well, I can't really speculate that. I know that we are very far out ourselves, even continuing to try to help the state regain management. Many of our people are so tired of feeling like you're a political football being kicked around, especially our elders. They don't understand why this is so highly politicized, why it seems that it's such a difficult thing to resolve. And many of our people live in areas that are surrounded by federal lands. The Delta, for example, a lot of areas don't have a lot of state lands there. And our people work with the federal fish and game, fish and wildlife managers on a regular basis. They have cooperative agreements with them. They have working relationships. They know it can work. And so a lot of our people's feeling, if the state's not willing to come into compliance on that, that we can work fine with the federal managers. It's not that that's our first choice of who we want to do it, but people have experience working on it. I mean, you have the goose management plan in the Delta, you have migratory birds, you have, as was mentioned, Reggie yesterday, walrus management, whaling commission. People in the Native community have a lot of experience working with federal managers on that, and we know that we can make the federal implementation work if the state doesn't choose to regain management. Whether or not, if the state gives up the opportunity in the next few days to even put this on the ballot, whether or not we would revisit that later, I couldn't speculate. All I know is we would do everything we can to make sure that the federal implementation was fully protecting our people's needs and working within the system that the Federal Department of Interior and Agriculture set up, bringing forward our petitions in their process to try to make it work, try to correct the problems, try to address the need, and let people get on with their lives.
Mr. Chairman, final question here. I'd like to have your opinion on the committee substitute, and particularly of your counsel, on the D version that the committee has before us and the problems you see of it in it, and if it was modified in some ways, as to, like, for example, place of residency and any defects as it relates to other sections of other resources. Do you have an opinion on the committee substitute?
Is that the substitute that was adopted by resources yesterday?
Yes, the version D.
I'll make some comments and then Mr. Norman can make some comments. We understand that you've asked for an opinion from the Secretary of Interior, and I don't know whether or not you've gotten that opinion on that yet, but that was something that we were also waiting to see. Do we have any information on that?
We have not received any information as of about an hour and a half ago from the Secretary.
Norman, do you want to guess it?
As the Attorney General, Mr. Chairman,
Would you state your name
Norman
for
Norman Cohen. Counsel for AFN.
Thank you, sir.
I think that the Attorney General and the committees yesterday had a very thorough discussion of the proposed CS and what it would do or not do. I can agree with the Attorney General pretty well that the portion dealing with proximity would be very helpful in solving the Tier 2 problem. The question is whether it provides the flexibility for the legislature to pass a law that would be consistent with ANILCA. As presently written, I do not believe that it does provide the legislature the flexibility it would need, so there would have to be other changes. I don't have any specific ones to give you right now as to what would need to be done, but certainly that one portion of it would be helpful in the Tier 2 portion of the state, what the state would have to do. So it does some of the things, but I don't think it does what all that needs to be done.
And, Mr. Chairman, what about the blueberry clause, or the which I call the other resources? Is there a problem with that in the draft version?
In this draft?
Yeah, version D. Right.
This issue, Mr. Chairman, this issue has come up before as to whether there would be a need to have that language in or not, and I think reasonable minds can differ as to whether it's necessary or not. I don't think that it hurts the situation at all, and it may solve some problems that you can't really figure out at this point what would happen in the future. But the primary purpose here is to deal with fish and wildlife.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We're next to hear from Representative James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Kitka, I first of all want to compliment you on your calm demeanor, when certainly you must feel like that you're sitting as a target with arrows coming your direction every second, and you're responding very, very well and very matronly, I guess. But you know, I have to say that I've been studying this issue intently for so long, I don't think there's any one part of this that I don't understand. I want to make it perfectly clear to you and all of the other Aboriginal folks in this state that I have no feeling except admiration for you and the plight that you are in. I have lots and lots of friends and foster children who are of Native heritage, and they're very fine folks, and I want to compliment you on your ability. That doesn't mean that all of your Native folks are flawless, like a lot of us non-Natives. We're not flawless either. And so lots of times we have to pay the price for those folks who misbehave. And I think you probably understand that in the rhetoric that you get from the general public. I, too, experienced the same thing that Representative Olgan is referring to, because I honestly, in my heart, truly believe that we could draft a legislation in this state as a statute under our existing constitution that would recognize the intent of Anilka better than Anilka does. But I have not been able to find anyone who participates in that, who is willing to help me define the needs that we need to define. We need to define subsistence. We need to define the customary and traditional. And we need to define, there's one more, slipped my mind. But in any event, we need to define those things so that we can give them a priority. And we have the right to give a priority over these uses. But I find the same thing is unwillingness to talk. Now, I understand that position. Because when you're in the best position you think you're ever going to get, you're not about to give away anything. And who are you to trust me to say I can do this or you can do this? There's a large number of people to vote. And you're willing to bend, because when you bend, the wind may blow you over. And I understand that totally. But I then find myself very frustrated. And as a legislator, I find the most difficult thing I have to do is to make a politically correct statement or a politically correct decision. I just like to do the right things. And in my heart, I believe that if we submit to the federal government's definition of rural, which is unfair on both sides of the line, that the long-term effect of that for the people in Alaska, both Native and non-Native, will be damaged more than if we could at this point in time come to an agreement to work together and be common, cooperative, respectful people. So I urge you as well, if Representative Olgan is willing to talk. And there's one other thing I wanted to say, too, and I'll ask you this question, is that I believe that Secretary Babbitt has nothing to do with this. That if AFN asked Secretary Babbitt to take a position, he would take your position. I believe he's a spokesman for you. I don't think he's a spokesman for himself. He's going to be there and stand to the bitter end to protect you, because he believes seriously in the Native Americans' needs. If you said to him, I believe this is a good solution, I believe he would say,